is our afflicted? Where, oh, where can our afflicted be?
Afflicted messaged me and said, I may be late. We'll see. So I guess we're seeing.
We are
now,
seeing.
Because afflicted is not here. Where's afflicted, man?
We're afflicted free.
And Pete free.
Yeah, and Peter's not here either. So Peter is, he's got a cough that he did not want to inflict on the listeners. So we appreciate that, Pete, if he's listening. We'll see.
I am, even as we speak, I am installing into a virtual machine on my Mac the Windows 8 Consumer Preview, which came out today.
So take that, haters.
I have already borked a virtual machine, a Windows 7 virtual machine on my iMac at home. I stupidly
tried to upgrade.
The upgrade went fine until I tried to install Parallels Tools. I run them in Parallels Tools are like special drivers for a virtual machine.
Yeah.
And you have to wait really for Parallels to release the drivers for any new operating system. Stupidly, I thought, well, maybe I can try it.
Well, I mean, what did you do? Did you try to upgrade one of your Windows 7 virtual machines?
Yes, I made a copy of it first.
Oh, that's so bork is probably...
No, but it's
a virtual borking.
It was a virtual borking, but it was still frustrating and palpitation-inducing nevertheless.
I have to believe that you thought for a moment, at least at one point during this whole thing, that this may not go very well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like a total surprise.
Prepared, but reality versus anticipation are two different things.
Knowing it might happen and accepting it when it does happen are two different things.
Now, I have installed it. I installed it on a TouchSmart 520 that I have, a review machine at the office, and installed beautifully on there, except it's a touchscreen machine, and Windows 8 is a touchscreen interface, but there's no drivers for this particular touchscreen.
So. Well, let me interrupt this broadcast to let you know that you're listening to Technology Bites. That's the name of this show. No Flicked, no Peter.
He's here. He just pulled up.
He did?
I heard the rumble of the, the motorcycle.
Hearing him arrive and having him be here are not the same thing. All right, well, then the Groove House is going to probably have to let him in or punch the button. So you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Oh, I'm Barrett. Wow, that's a big skip.
I'm White.
And he's on the board. All right, so...
Afflicted is outside.
Here he is.
Yay!
So that's... there he is. Look at him. Look at Afflicted arrive. Now we can have a show. Now we can do stuff. Ah, and he brought company. He brought a hat warmer. All right, so now we got to wait for people to settle in. So without Peter Hughes doing the Technology Bites info shot, we will be probably jumping to the phones a lot quicker than we will be jumping to the phones a lot quicker. So if you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. And Groove House is even now prepping his phone call answering station by breaking out his laptop so he can play solitaire. And getting ready to take your calls. Afflicted is trying to combobulate himself and sit down at the microphone. And so do you have a tardy slip?
If you give me a minute, I'll get it off of my computer.
Do they have like an iPhone app tardy slip now? Like you can just flash your phone at your teacher and say, here's my mom's,
email?
Email?
Text message.
All right, so... Dwight started off the show talking about a Microsoft product, and that flies in the face of the comment that I got on the Geek Radio site. I guess it was probably Thursday or Friday after I'd posted the podcast. Somebody came by and commented on the podcast and said how sad he was that that I was considering going all in on the Mac. Because that was what Barrett had said on the show. You're thinking about going all in. Because I was talking about getting an iPhone, and saying, yeah, but think about going all in. Not that I haven't really gone all in already. But he says, yeah, so now Technology Bites is going to be just nothing but a Mac chat. Just Mac chat. And I was like, and I really wanted to respond to him. But he cruised by with a fake name and a bogus email address.
But it really depends on the caller.
I wanted to say that. So I'm using my on-air podium to make my response. I wanted to say, really, I mean, what's wrong with the Mac chat anyway? We've been spyware chat for years and years. And then, but see, he didn't say, his name was like Bob Robertson or something, and then he gave a bogus email address. And he was talking about how sad he was that I was, you know, this is going to turn into a Mac chat. Then I saw the IP address from where he posted this comment from, and it was from HP. And then I got sad. I wanted to be able to say, yeah, no, when was the last time HP did something that was worth talking about and getting excited about? I mean, that's really what drives the show.
The touchpad, the HP touchpad. we're going to get rid of the PC division. Oh, wait, no, we're not. Never mind.
Well, we could have,
that
like...
That got us excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, when was... Now HP's going to be the no-tablet company.
The no-tablet company. They just haven't signed up for this whole tablet nonsense.
They're going to be doing Windows 8 tablets. They're casting their lot with Windows
8. Well, and we'll talk about that when it happens.
But if they did that, then why did they ditch all the webOS hardware? Why didn't they just wait and put Windows 8 on that hardware?
Did you ever play with that hardware?
No.
All right.
Have you ever played with Windows 8?
No.
Dwight can tell us that it probably was not a good fit.
It probably would be, but the hardware was a little weak.
So, you know, when HP rebirths themselves, you know, come by and make another comment. Let us know. We'll talk about that.
Ooh, I do have something, since the news isn't going on, because I'm sure he probably would have talked about this, I would think. I do have something I want to mention.
Okay.
And most of y'all have probably seen it, maybe discussed it already. The whole deal with the state of Maryland going against that betting site and basically getting them to pull down their website, which was a .com, right? But the company that ran it was in Canada, and the registrar they registered it through was Canadian. But the state of Maryland got VeriSign to actually change the IPs in the root domain, so on all the root DNS servers, so that it goes to now a page that says that basically this domain was seized by the U.S. government. But it wasn't a U.S. company. It wasn't registered through a U.S. registrar.
So they hijacked the DNS?
They took the DNS. Because VeriSign is a U.S. company, they went to VeriSign and the government told them, you know, take this domain away and redirect it to our IP. And they did.
So does it route to the normal IP everywhere else in the world, or does VeriSign have enough?
Their root DNS.
Root DNS.
Because VeriSign owns .com, so they can put anything they want to in the .com domain. They can change whatever they want, no matter who it's registered through or where it's registered. Anyway, it's a lot of really kind of frightening implications for .com, .net, .org.
.us. I
mean, basically anything that's in the U.S., even if the company's not a U.S. company, they're not breaking... Well, they're not a U.S. company. They don't have to obey U.S. laws.
But does the domain registration belong to the U.S.? I mean, do you actually own...
.com belongs to VeriSign.
Okay.
They are the arbiters of .com.
So you never really own your own domain.
They're a U.S. company.
But you don't own your domain, technically, do you?
Not really. I mean, you do, but yeah, it can be taken away from you. But it's just... It brings up a lot of interesting things. This was something people were scared about because, you know, if some company in a country that has different laws than the U.S. breaks U.S. laws, the government can take away the domain from them, even though they're not a U.S. company, they weren't registered in the U.S. So what it does is it just has some chilling implications for anybody who is a non-U.S. company that has... .com domain or .net, .org. I forgot there were a couple of others. So you, at that point, you kind of have to go through a domain that's not controlled by a U.S. company. Or otherwise, the U.S. can take your site away. Even though you're not a U.S. citizen, U.S. company, U.S. under U.S. law.
But they're not really stopping the company, but they're taking the domain which belongs to us anyway. And they're preventing a company outside the United States from doing business that's illegal inside the United States.
But it's not just blocking in the U.S., it's blocking in the world.
Okay, so if that company wanted to do, if that was legal elsewhere, we've stopped it from happening anywhere.
Right, right. So, I mean, some of the things are like, well, what's going to happen? Are we going to end up with, like, we're basically going to split DNS so that we're going to have different people that point to different root servers for top-level domains. You know, there's just it's interesting.
You know, I think we're just moving to a time when we all have to start memorizing IP addresses.
Just in time for IPv6. All right.
That'd be a serious mental exercise.
713-526-5738 if you want to weigh in on the discussion. So which site was it? I mean, I hadn't heard the news.
Bogdog or something like that?
Yeah, it was some gambling site. But the thing is, it wasn't even the U.S. government, like, at the U.S. level.
It was state level.
It was a state of Massachusetts that they said something like their law was that you can't flaunt that you're doing something that goes against state law. And since the site said that it was basically allowing gambling online or something, which goes against the state of Massachusetts law, that the state of Massachusetts filed with the government to have the website seized and taken down. And so even the definition of how they justify doing it is a little shaky. I don't know. It's weird because it's like one state in the U.S. got this domain name removed from the entire world for a company that's not a U.S. company and didn't have the name registered in a registrar that's in the U.S. But where they were touchable was VeriSign's a U.S. company that resides in the U.S. And so they can go in and edit .com and do whatever they want.
Where does the domain end and the website begin?
Is that rhetorical?
It's kind of rhetorical and stupid. All right. Well, 713-526-5738. Since we're not going to have an info shot, we'll be going to the phones a little bit sooner, as soon as like a call comes in. Here on Technology Bites, Groovehouse is going to now close the door and seal us in. Wow. Hermetically sealed, Dwight.
Special effects.
So.
Yeah, do you have that sound on your phone there?
It's radio magic.
He doesn't have a light.
Oh, we do. We do need a soundboard. We need a Technology Bites.
We just need one.
We need to get an old style MIDI keyboard with a tone generator and just assign each key its own noise. And then, yeah, because that would certainly keep us all entertained. I like the idea of it being on a phone, though, on Groovehouse's phone specifically, that he's allocated a certain amount of his valuable phone real estate and resources. He's thinking about it. His phone is like right there. I got mine.
You have a couple.
I do. I downloaded a few because I wanted to be much more like Groovehouse than I was previously. All right. So, it's awfully quiet here. All right. Let me give out some information about the show. We got our website at geekradio.com.
Still with the big ad.
The big ad. I tweeted last week. I said when I published the podcast, I said the podcast is up. It's right under the big ad, and then somebody's like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
So you listen to the podcast, you'll get it. We have the Geek Gathering coming up this Friday.
Friday.
Not only is it the Geek Gathering Friday, it's Texas Independence Day Friday.
It is, and today is Leap Day, so this show doesn't technically count, or it counts four times as much.
It'll vanish next year. The show.
Leap show.
And I will not be at the Geek Gathering. Sadly.
Well, don't announce that. Everybody else, no.
No one's going to come now.
Nobody's going to come now.
Oh, nonsense.
We'll have twice the capacity I meant.
There you go.
It's going to be, I think we're getting up like in the 80s tomorrow and maybe Friday.
Yeah,
it's going to be nice warm. And warm. A little bit of chance of rain there, but it should be a good gathering. We hope you'll come out and hang out with us. We're also on IRC tonight, hanging out in Pound Tech Bites or Tech Bites on irc.cuckoo.com. You can also connect using the IRC client we have on our website at geekradio.com. And if you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. Looks like we've got a call in the queue now. Somebody took pity upon us. And what is that? You got some extra noises there you want to introduce to the show?
Yes.
Oh. Yes, I know what that sounds like.
Are you building an interocitor in there?
No, it's a lightsaber. Sounds like
that's it. Actually just from the phone. The phone lines.
The phone line has some extra noise.
Yeah.
So when you pot up the phones, we get that extra hum.
We need a band.
A band?
We have like a band.
All playing gadgets?
Well, no, just backing us up. A house band.
A house band. Oh, okay. Kind of Paul Schaefer in the band kind of band. Please.
Prepare the Death Star. Of course, I couldn't get the drop tone.
I wonder if you need to play it through a reverse phase shifter or something. A reverse gate. I think I have one at home. All right. So, it looks like we got a call in the queue.
We do.
Do you have a call in the queue?
We do.
All right. Groovehouse.
All right.
Who do we have up?
Up first on the show, we've got Clay.
Clay, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I've got kind of a general couple of questions about... I've just upgraded from an old system that was like God knows how old, XP. I was running XP, and so now I'm just got a Pavilion DV6-6C14 NR laptop. It was a great deal. It's like $499 at Micro Center. Well, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but... I'm wondering one thing regarding security. Do you think I'm cool with just what I've got on here, which is just the Norton's security suite? I mean, in the old days, I had all sorts of stuff, like Cygate personal firewall and ThreatFire and some other things. I was under the impression that there's some feature within this laptop that allows me to wirelessly connect to a monitor. A contemporary monitor, and I'm not sure how to do that.
The key word in the Norton phrase is suite, which means it has a lot of stuff, and you don't need anything else as long as you're willing to use that. And you have to pay for it, and that the free one on there will expire. But it has pretty much what you need.
Yeah, it's got the firewall in there. It's got the antivirus. Right. It's got the anti-malware. It's probably got some kind of spam protection and phishing protection.
In fact, I think the current version even has some identity protection.
So, it's certainly suitable. My philosophy on that kind of stuff is really the best security for your computer is going to be you and what you use it for and how you use it. But if you're the kind of person who trips over viruses left and right and spyware and giving out your personal information.
I haven't gotten a virus. I've been on computers since, they started back when you had punch cards.
Right.
So, back in the old days, I think I may have gotten a couple, at the very beginning. But since then, not really. So, but I've also been very careful about, what I've... my habits as well as, what I lock down on my computer.
Well, my thought is that you should, regardless, even myself, who I consider myself pretty clever on the internet at times, I run an antivirus software on any Windows-based computer that I use. I'll run antivirus just to have that kind of first level. Actually, it's more of a second level of defense. The first level is if you have high-speed internet, you should have a router in place.
Okay.
Do you have high-speed internet?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know.
I've got AT&T's basic, setup, but it's not wireless.
Well, no, I don't care about the wireless. I just care about whether or not you have broadband. So that includes your DSL, your UVerse, and your Comcast.
It's a DSL, I'm pretty sure, as far as I'm concerned. I was thinking about upgrading the AT&T system all in one, with the TV and the internet as well, since I've got AT&T.
All right, well, listen, let me finish my comment here, been using computers since punch card days. It would behoove you to know whether or not you have a router.
Well, I don't.
Okay. By having your computer connected to a modem directly to the internet, you are susceptible to, there are computers out there in the wild internet that come looking for you. They scan IP ranges and look for open ports and look for vulnerabilities. So you should have your computer behind a router at the very least. And that will mitigate some of your much of your need to have any firewall or security software up in place, because the router is going to prevent direct connections to your computer from the internet. So that'll give you more of your resources to your system to run.
if you upgrade to UVerse, which is the television internet that you're describing, they will give you kind of an Uber router modem combo, and that will provide firewall protection. If you're thinking about moving to UVerse, that will do it. They'll give you one.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, and take care of most of my issues. With ThreatFire, I could always see, or I don't know if it was ThreatFire, honestly, or if it was the Cygate. It would show me when anybody was pinging my ports and stuff.
Right.
And I don't have that now.
But you kind of don't. You don't need that now. There's so many things that are pinging your ports. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And there is a firewall in Windows. There's a firewall in the security suite. And you shouldn't be connected directly to the modem as you are, but regardless, you don't need to know that information. It'll just drive you nuts.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So, but my point being is that when you run a security suite like something like McAfee or Symantec, those programs tend to be kind of bloated and use a lot of system resources. Your new computer is probably quite capable and will handle running that software, but you could certainly reduce the amount of overhead on your PC by not running those programs, and by having a router, you would not need to run those programs. So a nice, lightweight antivirus program would probably be, and a router would probably be all you needed.
Okay. Okay. And with regard to the other question I'm not as up-to-date lately, so the friend that, helped me pick this laptop out, it was a good price, and one of the things that, he mentioned was that it had the capability of connecting directly to, like, a flat screen, monitor without, wirelessly. And I haven't been able to look that up anywhere online and see how to do that or what that is. Do you have any idea what he was talking about?
There's a box that I've seen for sale that will allow computers that have the capability that you're talking about. You connect this to your TV, or you use this to connect to your wireless network, and it allows the computer to send the video signal on the computer to the TV. But you have to have either a television that's enabled for that, or you need another device that the computer connects to translate that signal, to the best of my knowledge. Because I haven't researched it extensively, but I was interested. I've got a pretty new smart TV, and I was interested in projecting, having my laptop display go to that. And you have to actually buy another piece of hardware to have that happen, and it has to be a certain kind of computer that's capable of it. But if you Google search it, HP wireless monitor, your model, you should find somebody who's written about how to do it.
Okay. My impression was that he was saying there was a new, there was something built into this computer.
There is.
There
is something built into that computer that gives it the capability, but I don't think it's just going to hook up straight, wirelessly to just any monitor.
Okay.
The monitor or the television has to be connected to your network, and then this connects to the network and sends the signal to the television. I don't know exactly how to do that, but you're not going to be able to take this laptop and a flat panel monitor that's, 2 years old or even a year old or maybe even modern, and just have it project onto that screen. You need, the screen either has to have the capability to receive that signal from the laptop, or you need a device that you can connect to the screen that will receive that signal.
Is this the Intel technology? Is this something that, because I know Intel sells a technology that's put in a lot of consumer notebooks. Is that what this is?
Yeah, it's a second generation Intel course, i5.
It's WIDI.
WHDI.
It's WIDI. It's a wireless, it's Intel wireless display.
Yeah. So you would have to get something to receive it to attach to the TV.
I see.
Yeah, I'm looking at like Intel talks about, they show the laptop. There's a box. There's a device that you can get, and if you have for a smart TV to do that with. But if you Google it, if you look it up, Intel wireless display, you'll find all the information you need on it. But it's not, like I said, it's not going to connect to the monitor that you have now. You're going to need equipment that supports it. The laptop gets you part of the way there, but you still need a device that's going to receive that signal to be able to make it work.
All right. Thanks. I know I'm taking up all your time.
That's all right. We appreciate your call.
All right, thanks.
All right. Y'all getting settled in there? Groove House Inflicted? Yeah, y'all getting settled?
A little bit.
All right. Everything going okay?
Oh, yeah.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We'd love to hear from you. We've got another call in the queue, it looks like, but we have plenty of open lines. So, you did hear that Pete's not here, right,
yes.
Flicked? So he's not trying to wire that up.
No.
Okay. So make sure he wasn't spinning his wheels. All right. Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Eric.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah, Eric, you haven't heard from in a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. I was just thinking of Tower of Babel not too long ago. For
Babel
some reason,
Tower.
That just, yeah. Wow.
I know.
Yeah. Anyway, so what's up, Eric?
I'm having problems with the RAM on my desktop PC. It's working. It's just that last fall, I basically did a rebuild on the computer, not by choice, but I had bought new, I doubled the RAM from 2 gigs to 4 gigs and turn it on and it doesn't work and I ain't getting the beeps. So I think, well, what's wrong now? And I ended up replacing several pieces of hardware, including the power supply, before I found out that I had simply not seated the RAM properly. So, $400 later or whatever it was, now, the RAM is seated. I have this program called System Information for Windows that tells me all the great details that I need for hardware. It's seeing my 4 gigs of RAM, no problem. Even tells me my motherboard has a maximum capacity of 8. The problem is some of my programs, graphics programs and stuff that I use, are only sensing half of it. So what's going on?
How are you determining that the programs are only sensing half of your available RAM?
I don't remember how, but I've had some, I think AutoCAD does this to me, and I know Corel Painter does it too, where you can set the amount of RAM it uses for resources, and it's only showing 2 gigs worth.
Is it showing 2 gigs in use or 2 gigs as your max?
Two gigs is max.
I want Dwight, memory allocations, and I've not played with memory allocation. I've set swap files before, and I do.
Yeah,
seem
I know.
To recall,
I know how to do that.
I seem to recall that. Yeah, some Adobe graphics programs you can
It's called a scratch file.
Scratch file, yeah.
Right.
But
right.
Is that memory or is that hard?
That's
drive?
A virtual. That's a virtual. It's virtual memory. It's like
yeah.
A swap file.
Right, but
it
it's in RAM.
It's
swap file. So, well, no, not always.
Okay, but so he's got a. He says that these systems are only reporting 2 gigs available for his of his RAM when he's trying to allocate resources to the programs. But
right.
But the system itself sees the 4 gigs.
Yeah.
It could be that it's just not because he's running these specific programs to they're protecting that memory space and they're not giving him any more than that.
I mean, before you did this to the computer, did they see the 4 gigs?
No, I didn't have 4 gigs before this. So I updated from 2 to 4.
You updated from 2 to 4.
And gone in and tried to, you might have already said this, but have you gone in and tried to actually up the memory cache inside of Photoshop?
Is it Photoshop? Or is it not just
Corel Painter?
Oh, Corel.
I didn't know it had that capability.
Corel Painter probably doesn't.
Yeah.
And Corel is not an Adobe product. It's a Corel.
Right.
Right.
Well, but I think we got confused and associated Adobe. When I think graphics programs, I think Adobe, but he did say Corel.
I think AutoCAD was having the same problem, too, but it would take me 5 minutes to load it. It's a slow program. But
how much money did you spend to upgrade your computer to 4 gigs?
I'm sorry, what was that?
How much money did you spend to upgrade your PC to 4 gigs?
Well, I don't know. I ended up getting a new graphics card, a new power supply, something else, too. I don't remember what, and I don't think it was a sound card, but something else. I had to get a new cable for my monitor. But I thought my monitor was going out. I'd plug everything in, and I'd see nothing. And the computer wouldn't even do the normal system beeps that you hear at the beginning. So all it really was that I hadn't, pushed hard enough to get the RAM into the slot.
Right.
Did you replace the full 2 gig, or are these two? You have two in there, and then you added two more.
I had 2 1 gig RAM slot, whatever you call them.
Memory sticks.
Memory sticks. Both slots were filled.
And so you pulled the whole thing out.
Slots are working.
So you replaced both of them.
I'm sorry?
You replaced both of them.
Right.
Now, is this a machine that started off as one that you built yourself, that you put together from components, or did it start off as a name brand?
No, someone else. I mean, it's a custom built. I didn't build it myself. Okay. I don't know how. But
it is a custom built that somebody built for you.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that the thing that we don't know for sure is I'm guessing that the system board supports the 4 gigs, you know, by putting in, that's pretty standard. It's not, wouldn't be surprising to learn that it actually does support it. It's counting up the memory.
Yeah.
And,
I'm looking at the motherboard stats now. It says maximum capacity 8 gigs.
And you're relatively confident you got the right memory for it.
Yeah, DDR2.
If the system's seeing it, there, it may just be some of the applications. Like, some of the applications you got may have been written at a time when, you know, the system couldn't see more than 3 gigs. I know at least for CorelDRAW, it says right here that the default memory allocation is set to 25%, and it can be increased to as high as 50%. So if you've got it maxed out, there's your 2 gigs.
Right, so if you have 4 gigs of RAM on this thing, and you've got a program that will only let you allocate half of that, then there's your 2 gig.
Well, Corel opens faster than AutoCAD, so let me see.
And that's one example, but I would go in and search application by application and attack it, you know, at the application level, because the system's seeing it.
Barrett makes a good point. If the system is seeing the RAM, but the programs are not, it might just be a limitation of the software, or you're misreading what you're seeing or expecting it to be a higher number, because I don't see that would make sense that a program like Corel would not allow you to allocate your entire RAM space to that one application, because the operating system needs some of that to run, and background applications need to run.
Yeah, I understand. Where would I find how to be under preferences or what?
Where would you find what?
Where would I find how to change the memory?
Well, it sounds like you've got it maxed out.
What do you mean change the memory for what program?
In Corel?
Well, I'm in Corel. I just hit performance.
I don't know Corel well enough to tell you how to change that setting. I thought that was some place you've already looked.
Well, I had, and I don't remember. I can't remember now how I found that. It's just that it was perplexing, because I have 4 gigs, and you're telling me you're only seeing 2. So what's going on?
Well, what I just found, I mean, I'm not seeing where you set that, but I did find a Corel article on their knowledge base site that says the max that they'll suggest and the max they'll let you go is 50%. So
I
the
see.
Default is 25%. It sounds like you found the max and you maxed it out, but the max that they'll let you go is 50%. The reason they give is because anything more is going to degrade system performance, and I want you to do that. Per, Corel.com.
Right, okay. Well, maybe, I don't know. I don't know where I saw it again. It could be even under, I use Opera for my browser, so it may have said as much as well.
Well, I'm guessing that a computer that you had custom built that only came with 2 gigs of RAM is probably not going to be, how old is the computer? How long have you had it?
4 or 5 years.
So one of the Corel developers is saying most of Draw is still native 32-bit, which means that it doesn't have access to over 2 gigs of RAM. So I think you're fighting a losing battle with Corel.
And he has a 60-bit.
I had read.
No, 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 no. He's got a 5-year-old PC. No, he does not have a 64.
I read something that to the effect about the 32-bit stuff online, but I didn't quite understand what they were saying, because it was.
It's memory addressing, and that's kind of what I was tying into earlier, is, up until recently, most 32-bit systems couldn't see more than 3 gigs of system RAM, usually.
Okay.
So, if you're an application programmer, why would you write an application use more RAM than you're going to need? And usually what they do is they take 2/3 for them, they leave 1/3 for the operating system. So that was just kind of standard practice, 5-6 years ago. So that's what's going on now. So even though you can run it on a 64-bit system, they haven't refactored the code to take advantage of more memory and, do everything like that.
Are you still running XP on this?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, I'm thinking that, you know, even though you had the system custom built, that your money may not have been as well spent, you know, trying to re-piece that computer together with the original system board and the original processor on that age. You're not going to, you'll see an increase in performance by doubling your RAM for sure. But for the effort and the money that you put into it with the RAM and the video card and the power supply and new cables and stuff, a current PC on the market today with 4 gigs of RAM probably would have been comparable in price and would have had the benefit of having an updated operating system and updated processor.
Well, sure. It's just that I didn't know that the problem was I hadn't installed the RAM properly.
Ah, okay.
So every time I turned it on after fixing something else that I thought was a problem, that wasn't it. And then I finally thought, okay, let me see if the RAM is seated right, and it wasn't. And that was the problem from the very beginning. That's why I ended up doing kind of a half rebuild, and I didn't need to.
Well, now you're only $100 away from a new system board and a processor, maybe a couple $100, so you may go that route.
Well, yeah, but then I'm going to have to reload every piece of software I have, and that's the last thing I want to do right now. So.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Well, hopefully that helps. I mean, that makes sense what Barrett found, that the program, I'm sure that version of Corel you're running is probably not the newest version either, is it?
No.
So it's going to be factored into the limitations of the operating systems that were available at the time that it was produced. And as Barrett said, the 32-bit machines that are real common or were pretty much the everyday machine from 5 years ago, they could only address 3 gigs of RAM or 4 gigs of RAM. I think it was only three.
It was
3.87 or something
And then depending on whether or not the graphics card was using system memory or its own memory, there might have been some allocation for the video card as well.
Right.
So the fact that the system is booting properly and sees all the RAM, then you're probably just facing a limitation of the application that you're using.
That's kind of what I thought. Well, I'll probably either have someone build me a new one sometime later this year, I don't know, but it's just the one thing I do not look forward to is having to reload all my software.
Well, it's better to do it on your terms than to wait for a system to die and have to do it.
I know. Well, I've had to do that too. Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
All right. Good. Thanks for calling, Eric. It was good to talk to you.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
All right. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-KPFT. What, Flicted?
We came up with a theory.
A theory.
About the low call levels, that, you know, possibility.
Is it because there's a new Star Trek movie?
No,
whoa, is there? I'm out.
See you later.
I thought that was summer.
No, the season finale of Lost on, or what?
It's kind of along the right tracks, though.
Yeah? What's premiering?
Well, so it's two things combined. First of all, my theory, a working theory I have, is that when geeks kind of get over D&D and some of the sci-fi stuff and comic books and they're looking for something to do, they get into craft beer now.
Oh.
So a lot of geeks are going into craft beer, right? And so St. Arnold had their official release of Endeavor, which is the DR11 turned into a regular release. So that people are going at that. Now, in addition, though, which is, I forgot about that, but Groove pointed out that to celebrate the Endeavor release, which they named Endeavor after the space shuttle, and so it's got a space shuttle thing, so that's going to attract some people, too. They're showing the movie Spaceballs.
Oh, really?
In the parking lot at St. Arnold.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
All right. That's it for Technology Bites.
We're out of here.
Did we miss it?
Is it? It's like happening right
now.
Yeah,
I think it already started.
But I think I have it on DVD also, so.
Yeah, but Spaceballs in the parking lot drinking craft beer.
Yeah, well, I think I have a DR9 and 10, maybe.
Okay. Somebody wanted to, somebody came by Geek Radio and sent a contact. They said HP does have a tablet device, and it's not the touchpad. It's called the Slate, and it runs Windows 7.
Yes, they do have an existing
tablet device.
Tablet now. It's probably they probably sold about four of them.
So, yeah. I'm not going to go all in with the Slate.
No, yeah, the Windows...
Slate Chat. Welcome to Slate Chat.
Windows folks like to call them slates because they don't want to, like, use the, you know...
The tablet. Or the pads.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Slate Chat would be about a five-minute-long show broadcast once a month on the HD channel of KPFT.
Dwight's running Windows 8 over here.
Yeah.
I don't know if we mentioned that on air.
I don't know if we... Did we talk about the fact that Dwight got the preview release?
The consumer preview was released today.
Of Windows 8.
You're completely messing up
the Mac chat.
All Mac chats.
Really?
No, I'm doing
How
that.
Dare you?
I'm running it on a Mac.
I'm doing that.
I'm running it on a Mac.
Don't give Dwight all the credit.
Oh, yeah, Groovehouse is...
Groovehouse has got Solitaire going on his Windows XP computer.
Yes, I do. There's Solitaire on Windows 8, too. So.
He's been Windows loyal this whole time.
This whole time.
That's same because computer. He uses his money to buy camera gear and not new computers.
So one of the things it does, it picks up your settings.
Now, this is a virtual machine?
This is a virtual machine.
You didn't just wipe out your Mac?
Oh, he's running it on a Mac.
So it picked up the picture I took today on the machine where I'd installed it. It has... The colors and all the apps that I'd put on it.
I got to say, looking at the screen for Windows 8, it makes up for why, you know, the what I consider to be the fault of the Windows Phone. And it's nice that it ties in. It looks a lot like a Windows Phone, but it looks like they've actually using the desktop real estate properly. The Windows Phone, I've always hated because it has that big blank negative space off to one side. So it looks like everything's kind of off kilter on the Windows Phone. But the, wow, it looks just like Solitaire.
It is. It's exactly like Solitaire.
So you're playing Windows-based Solitaire, which is on a Mac.
He's installed the brand new version of Windows on a Macintosh
to play Solitaire. And I can sign in to Xbox Live.
Do you have the CD?
Yes.
Can I? Pass it this way.
Now, you're running that on the same era MacBook Pro that I'm running mine, right?
Yes.
So...
Yes.
Now, is this one file, or is this just like all the media? Can I copy it off?
It is a fully burned. So yeah, if you could copy it onto your desktop.
Okay, and then I can burn it onto my own disk and make an install disk out of it, and that's legal.
Actually,
no.
Yes, it is legal.
Okay.
Although what you'll get is the setup designed to run on a DVD. You'd have to create an ISO yourself.
Right.
You might be better off getting to a fast connection and downloading the ISO, which is ready to burn.
Is that available?
Yes.
To everybody?
Yes. Came out today. You can get it. There's links in my blog.
Oh, okay.
The thrill's gone now that it's not pirated.
No, it's not pirated. It's
can
not
I, just have this,
to
can
me.
I just have this DVD?
No. Oh. I want to put it on other things.
So. Well, let me, just for the sake of doing it, I'm going to copy that thing off and see what I can. It's bootable, right?
That's it, right.
So
if you use, there's a tool, the disk utility. The Mac will
get
an ISO from that.
Oh, okay.
So that's what you should do.
Dwight, you mentioned Xbox Live. What's going on with that?
Windows 8 has components from Xbox Live, and so you can sign into your Xbox Live account from Solitaire and let everybody see your score.
Do you have a gamer tag for Solitaire?
yeah. But it and
aces are wild.
It's supposedly
/!!
Supposedly, you can play Xbox Live games on Windows with this. It's in a limited fashion, but you can do that.
Oh, like the games you can download and the ones that are online in there.
How long is this copy good for?
It's good until probably a certain period of time after the final version is out. So I'm not sure how long that is good for.
Do I have a release date or anything?
They're talking about probably in the fall.
Of 2014.
October is kind of the expected date.
Yeah, we've gotten a little bit off topic on the Mac Chat show here, so I got to bring this back around.
Okay, reel us in.
I signed up for iTunes Match last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So is that the one where you can get high-quality copies of your songs that you already have?
$25 a month, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A month or a year?
Sorry, a year. $25 a year. Yeah, so I signed up for that, and so then it had to, like, go through my entire library.
Wow, that's not
which
invasive.
Which is about 16,000 songs.
Well, they grab that anyway. Apple grabs
Yeah, the iTunes Genius stuff does that,
right.
If you have that on. But 16,000 songs, and then whatever
Apple.
Whatever they don't have in their library, they upload up to their servers in the cloud so you can have it available on all your devices. Hmm. So my opinion is sort of like, you know, you're like music cred is how many songs they can't match
your upload ratio.
Yeah. I thought it did pretty good because out of 16,000 songs, it couldn't match 4,000 of them. I think that's pretty good.
Wow.
That's like a fourth, right?
It's a fourth, yeah.
All this would make would be all of this would be more important to me if I had a music library that I cared about. I just don't own music anymore.
I've ripped 700 or 800 CDs mm-hmm. probably, but I probably still have about 200 more, and I bet almost none of those are in their library.
Yeah, well, a music collection as eclectic as I would expect yours to be, that would certainly make sense. I'm still just enjoying XM and streaming radio with surprises. I would never think to go dig that song out of my library if I had it, but having it just sprung on me by surprise. I guess you get that from Shuffle somewhat if you do some playlists in iTunes.
I listen to a lot of electronic music, but my best outside of Pandora or Spotify. My favorites, where you don't control anything that's coming on, are Soma, SomaFM.com, and DI.FM, which is digitally imported. Those are the best ones I've found.
Digitally imported is great. That's what
my favorite channel there is now is the hard dance channel, because I listen to hard style and it's just a little too much. But hard dance is a nice mix of some hard style, some dubstep.
I like Psy chill out.
You should listen to Space Station Soma on
Soma
FM.
I do. I like Space
Station.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
I was driving through Houston. thanks for bringing us back to Mac, where it all began last week. All right, 713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air with us tonight talking about your favorite music or radio. I know that we all saw this already, and I guess it was Groovehouse that brought it to our attention?
Mm-hmm.
The Hitler responds to the Kraftwerk. Mm.
That was that Barrett or Afflicted?
Was it Barrett?
That wasn't me.
Yeah.
I didn't point out the video. I just had talked about wanting to.
I know that. I know.
Yeah, I found the video.
You found
it. Yeah.
God, that was probably one of the best.
Hitler parody video, yeah.
You have to know the backstory a little bit. And thank God Afflicted gave us the backstory after the show. For those listening at home, Kraftwerk, which is probably one of Afflicted's most favorite electronic music bands, certainly a favorite amongst geeks. They're performing at the Museum of MoMA, Museum of Modern Art. They've got, I guess, what, 8 albums out?
Yeah, so they're dedicating, I guess, one show for each album.
Per night.
And the big uproar is that everyone's been limited to 2. You can only buy 2
tickets. And that's
if
you could even get them.
If you can
get
them,
can't get them because they went on sale, and
I got
on the site and got in the queue to buy them, and they were gone by the time they got to me. So
they're all handpicked to friends of MoMA and, NYU students. Scalped them,
which is
sort
of what Hitler goes on about.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny because
Kraftwerk is
German.
If you haven't ever seen the movie that clip's from, it's actually a really, really good movie.
It's very creepy movie.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful. I saw the movie like years ago before they ever started doing this with that clip, so I was actually familiar with the scene from the actual movie. But yeah,
what
they've done with it is hilarious.
Is actually kind of horrific.
Yeah.
What did you actually say?
Yeah, I remember reading an article with the director of that talking about how he felt about that they were doing this and if he thought it was funny or if he thought it was okay. They were talking about that and Hurt Locker, because Hurt Locker was going after everybody at the time for downloading Hurt Locker. But they were asking this guy about Downfall, and he was like, yeah, I guess it's probably a lot funnier if you don't speak German. Because if you speak German, you're hearing what he's really saying.
There's
subtitles. If you don't speak German, you're just reading the English subtitles. You don't know what they're saying.
It's probably a lot funnier with just Xbox captioning in there. That's all I was after.
Back to the Windows discussion.
No more Hitler. What?
My favorite tweet, though, was where Flicked said, you know, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but I have to agree with Hitler.
I feel a little uncomfortable admitting this, but I kind of agree with Hitler on this one.
So, Dwight, some people on IRC have directed me to the consumer preview download.
Right.
And it's downloading an executable.
Well, there's two places to get it. If you go in my blog, there's a link to a place where you can get ISOs. And there's a direct... Yeah. There's a place where you can get download ISOs directly.
Everything leads back to the tech blog.
Yeah. Well, it's don't just go through Microsoft. Go through there. Dwight.
Yeah,
it's just simpler. Go through Dwight.
Yeah. Let's take a call before top of the hour.
Oh, top of the hour to you. All right, let's do that then. Groothouse has spoken.
Yes, let's talk to Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thank you. I recently switched AT&T DSL. I was using a home phone line with DSL initially. I put my router behind or connected it to the AT&T system. Everything worked beautifully. I had to upgrade to UVerse because I was in UVerse area, and they have no routers that work in bridge mode. The point is that I was able to switch back due to my complaint in the retention department, but the new signal will not connect, even though I've got the PPOE password. I don't connect to the AT&T network. What can I do in terms of either procuring an AT&T router modem that will operate in bridge mode so I can put my router behind it, or to connect to AT&T dry DSL on copper that allows me to use my router and authenticate correctly?
AT&T should be able to give you a modem that is only a modem.
They can't.
They can't? Since when?
Check out the equipment site.
Oh, really? Have you talked to them? Have you made a talk to them verbally?
Many times. I started this process at Halloween, and you know, it's today, and I was absolutely assured by the salesperson that I would receive two pieces. I could discard the router and just use the modem. I did not receive that. In fact, right now I'm preparing to return two pieces of equipment, both at a router modem combinations, and I can't find an acceptable solution. A router modem that works in modem only mode with a bridge behind it to go to my router is cool, but I can't get a modem or a router modem in bridge mode out of AT&T, and I've elevated this to level 2 support.
So what's the, help me understand what the end goal is.
He wants to be able to use his own router.
The end goal is there are several minor concerns. The two biggest are I need to place restrictions on certain MAC addresses at certain times of day within my network, and I intentionally, after research, procured a router modem. Router that allowed that. I also wanted a gigabit switching router because I've got several switches, Ethernet switches in my house, but I need the core switch to also be gigabit. So
the only thing that they provide that you can get is their router, which is not going to support the gigabit Ethernet. And so even if you could take their router and connect your own router to it, you're still going to bottleneck at their router, right?
No, it's okay. I can move back to my router. If I get to my router is gigabit.
Okay, so you're saying that the one that AT&T provides, like I've got a cable modem from Comcast, and I've got a router connected to that. And then I have another router connected to that router, which also, you know, routes to the modem, which I have, you know, gives me greater control over my local network. You can't do that, but you can't just... go ahead, Barrett. You
want to... Is it the issue that they're giving you like a Class C address on the inside and you don't want that? You want like a Class A routable address all the way through?
It could be,
Is it hardware or software? Oh, we're getting cued that we're getting close to the top of the hour, I thought, but we may have to take a short break. Are you talking about an actual networking issue with their router, or are you talking about a hardware issue with their router?
It's either an authentication issue with their signal for my router that connected on February 7th to signal it was fine, authenticated, but won't do it today, is fine, or how to get a router that will authenticate with a DSL signal from AT&T and provide a bridge in modem-only mode to my router so that I can do what I need to do behind, to my network.
You can stack routers. I mean, that's what a lot of corporations do. You can have multiple gateways out to the internet. So as long as that AT&T router isn't blocking some sort of traffic that you need to get to your, the other router that you want, the secondary router, you can just stack that secondary router, the gigabit switches, everything you want to there. And then on the WAN side of that setup, just connect that to the LAN side of the AT&T device. And then packets will only hit that when it has to. You've got super high-speed network on the LAN side, but the only packets that go out over that are the ones that are, destined for the internet.
Well, that's interesting because the AT&T Level 2 support said that it doesn't support router-behind-router connections. And whenever I try to do that with getting even with assigning static IP address to my own router behind that and excluding that from the DHCP pool on the AT&T side, I don't get a connection to the AT&T router from my router mode.
Are you setting it up to where that AT&T router IP address is the gateway?
Correct.
I don't know. Did they give you a particular reason why you can't have a router behind a router? I mean, aside from VPNs, the double NAT thing, it should work.
I've done this many times. I started doing this stuff back when ISDN and DSL didn't exist. They didn't give me a specific reason, and the guy at Level 2 that seemed to be knowledgeable just said, well, I can't figure out how to do it.
Listen, we're going to take a short break. Yeah. We'll come back to you if you want to hang on. You're listening to Technology Bites. We're going to be right back after this. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Roofhouse.
Have you ever wondered what to do with your front yard other than grow grass? Been tempted to poison your grass so that you wouldn't have to mow it? Resented the bills for the water if you water it during the summer? Or refused to water it so it wouldn't grow so fast? If you've had any of those thoughts, as I have, or would just like to hear ecologically sound alternatives to the typical St. Augustine lawn, or perhaps you've been thinking of growing vegetables on some land you have access to and would like to know how to get started, join us on Thresholds this Thursday at 6 a.m. Bob Randall, one of the founders and former director of Urban Harvest, and M.C. Swearingen, a distinguished local arborist, will be George and John's guests to discuss alternatives to the English law, alternatives that might better serve the people of Houston and be more compatible with the changing environment we live in. It's a call-in show, and you'll have a chance to ask your questions of our guests. That's Thursday, 6 a.m., here on KPFT Houston.
Know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Baritone! Baritone! Baritone!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Baritone!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. Happy Leap Day, everyone. We're 60 days into the Gregorian calendar in a year that is evenly divisible by 4, which means that everyone gets an extra day. The situation arises because we have 365 days in our calendar, yet it takes the Earth 365 days and 6 hours to make a complete revolution around the sun. I think the whole problem could be solved by changing the name of the state of Mississippi to Mississippi, which could effectively elongate the standard measurement of the second long enough to account for the extra 6 hours. As of yet, no one's really gotten on board with my plan, which is sad because it was the first step in my 12-step program to conquer the world. If you're facing similar issues while sitting in front of your drawing board, maybe you just need the collaboration of the other evil geniuses that will be attending the March installment of the Technology Bites Geek Gathering. The important thing here is, important thing here is not to get discouraged, but rather to learn from your mistakes and the mistakes of others. So I'm thinking that we may make a little more progress if we identify some plans and some players that haven't seen so much success in the past. If your plan starts off with stealing underpants and isn't making a profit, you'd better get popping because a highly motivated, lowly situated group of people's already on the task. Any guesses on this? Knock it out of the park.
No.
Who's making money stealing underpants? No.
Oh, the
underpants. The gnomes. Yeah, they haven't completely failed, but they haven't really succeeded either.
I wasn't paying
either.
Enough attention. I'm sorry.
No worries. If you happen to be an underpants gnome, though, you're still welcome to attend the gathering this Friday. Our first real villain started off life with a full head of red hair, but due to an artist's mistake, quickly lost it. One plot, he tries to become president of the United States of America by winning the election on a platform of promoting technological progress. His first action as president would be to take a proposed moratorium on fossil fuel-based fuels to Congress. So red hair, pro-technology, wants to cut our dependence on fossil fuels. It sounds pretty solid. Any ideas who this villain is? Hint is, his plot usually includes 1, kill Superman, 2,
Lex
don't
Luthor.
Know, 3, profit, yeah, Lex Luthor. So let's not give up on domination through technology just yet. Maybe you can amass a secret portfolio of patents that may cover the world's most popular open source operating system. Then maybe you could talk a few companies into paying you royalties or settling the infringement case out of court, then use those precedents to sway other companies into paying you too, all without actually divulging the patents. Has that been done? I think maybe that's been done.
It's been done.
Oh, any idea who did it?
No. But
Darl McBride of SCO is the evil villain on that one. Now, if you feel a little maligned or that maybe you're a bit of a mutant, you might want to think twice before trying to lock up all the regular people. It's been tried. It failed. Any guesses who is behind that one?
I'm 0 for 1,000.
Yeah. The keyword in there was mutant.
Oh, Xavier?
Yeah, Magneto, yeah. Enemy of Professor Xavier of the X-Men. Xavier. Yeah. Now, a little bit easier on this one. Now, if reasoning, regular emotions, and all rationality go out the window when you sit down to hatch a plan, you may want to take a note from our next villain. In the movies, he was played by such greats as Cesar Romero, Jack Nicholson, and, don't know if it's a great, but Mark Hamill. Of course, Heath Ledger is probably the giveaway.
The Joker.
Yeah, with green hair and a wide smile, we've got the Joker. Pretty much if your plan includes kill the Batman, you're sunk. Even with Michael Keaton in the mix, he kicked butt and took names as Batman, Mr. Mom, and a business manager trying to keep jobs in his hometown automotive factory. So what if your plans include a rebranding based on the letters of your name and a reorganization of your entity into other spinoff ventures? What if your coworkers describe you as a raging psychopath devoid of all the normal human responses to other people's suffering? And what if you like salesmen? Hint, it's not Michael Keaton.
Steve Jobs.
Did I say salesman? I meant snakes.
Oh.
Voldemort. Voldemort. Oh. If you spin that out of the business speak, you get Voldemort.
I thought it was Cobra Commander.
Actually, that could be, yeah. There can be multiple right answers. And lastly, if your plan involves fighting a multi-fronted war with an undersupplied army, attacking Stalingrad instead of Moscow, and setting up panzer and infantry rally points hundreds of miles behind enemy lines, you can go ahead and find a ditch and some petrol right now. We probably don't have to mention that because we covered them earlier in the
show.
Napoleon. Yeah. No. Although, yeah, both of them maybe, actually. Yeah, again, two answers, yeah. So things get started this Friday, a little after 7 p.m. at Coffee Grounds in Midtown Houston, 2503 Bagby and McGowan is where you want to be. Coffee, tea, and smoothies are on site, and beer and wine are within walking distance. Hit our site at www.geekradio.com for the bigger-than-life flyer and details on the Geek Gathering. Hope to see you all Friday, but for now, that's it for your cautionary call to arms, and that's that for Barrett time.
Did I just overcompensate with that poster for this?
No, I think it's an awesome poster. I just think that people have mistaken when we said, hey, it's really big. I think that's taken on a life of its own, and
it
that's
has.
Not funny.
It's,
so, yeah, it's a joke within a joke.
It's
so,
the
yeah.
inadvertent meme.
So, did y'all see the TED Talk that was released?
The 3D printer?
No.
Which TED Talk?
The TED Talk
You know, there's a lot of them, right?
Did you read a book?
No.
Is that one internet page?
Is that one book?
Did you see the internet?
The TED Talk from 2023.
From the future?
Yes.
No, I haven't gotten there yet.
That's too bad. It's really cool.
Are you a time traveler?
No, they made it available on the TED.com website.
Wow. The way forward machine.
Cool. It's really cool. Also, did you see that they released a new trailer for the Avengers movie?
I didn't even know there was an Avengers movie.
What?
Yeah. The UK trailer?
No.
They released a second trailer. I'm not really necessarily all that excited about it, but this trailer did make it look better to me. And more possibly decent.
More HDR.
More HDR? Are they doing a movie in HDR?
I don't know. Maybe.
We lost our caller. Not hold on through Barrett time.
He got dropped earlier. He had been on hold for like 20 minutes, and he got dropped, and then he came back, and then, yeah.
I'm with Barrett. I find it, I mean, I can understand AT&T saying it's not capable, or they can't be done because they don't have a tech that's willing to sit down and explain it. But it seems to me, and this is what I did with my router. I mean, you know, I know with AT&T, even with UVerse, maybe, do you have to authenticate, Dwight? Yeah.
Let the router do it.
So the AT&T router, I know with pre-UVerse, you could buy a Linksys router, and it would do the authentication through the modem. So you just have a modem, but he's saying that there's no modem available. It's a modem router.
There is a way also with the two-wire that you can get into the settings of it. And I think you can set it up to allow a bridge mode.
There is a bridge mode only, but I all the posts talking about how to do that, they kind of ended around 2010. So I don't know if that went away with that particular model of 2-wire or what. But the idea is that you can stack. The only issue you might have is some VPN software stacks don't like the double natting, and that's all he's going to have to contend with. Everything else should work.
Or since it's the Mac chat show, back to my Mac doesn't like double NAT.
That makes sense.
I'm double NATed.
That makes sense.
At home.
I don't know. The other news that Peter might have mentioned, this is cool that I almost forget to mention, the Teams cable, like the huge cable that connects the African continent to the rest of the internet, was cut by a ship's anchor about two or three days ago.
What are the odds of that?
Yeah, seriously.
That just happened a lot.
It happens a lot. So now they're putting all the internet traffic through, I believe it's the C-Core or C-something kind of cable. So the idea here, though, is that it got extremely, extremely expensive to have outbound packets coming from the African continent. So if anyone gets any offers of being able to get like a lot of money for helping get money out of the country, they're real. 2 weeks. Act now.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. I'm down to 24%. How are you doing on power?
I'm at 80. You can have this back.
Can you unplug from over there, Dwight?
Yes.
We're buddy breathing on one.
Cables?
We're buddy breathing.
Buddy breathing.
Be sure you put the little...
What?
Sharing...
It's a diving term. I guess I've never gone diving, but it's where you share it on one oxygen tank for two people. We got one power supply.
Two live where one might have died.
You might want to put a condom on that thing since you're...
Goodness.
You
don't know where
he's
been. My port's clean.
When you look at my power supply and look at Barrett's port, only you come to condom. Well, maybe not only you.
All right.
713-52. Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm currently burning an ISO or creating an ISO from the DVD that I'm pirating from you of the free software because it was telling me it was going to take a day to download it. Now, does it matter whether I select the drive or, you know, when you're looking in the disk utility here, select here or here? Does it matter which one of those you select?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Because it shows you the drive, and then it shows you...
The image on the drive.
The image on the drive.
Yeah, I think you could just do the drive.
All right. I'm going to make sure I'm getting a good... Now, on your version of Parallels, you had to update a bunch of stuff to make this work?
I made sure I was on the most recent version of Parallels. You want to do that, but when you install it, you do not want to install the Parallels tools. The other thing you want to do is you want to go into the configuration for that and turn off the feature called the Smart Mouse. Even then, I was having occasional mouse problems where the cursor would disappear. I couldn't see it every time. So there's still some issues with it.
Somebody had commented that the Let me see if I can find the email that the person who told us about the slate followed up. And I want to find that. He was talking about Windows 8 running. Is it true to say, let me go, if I can get my mail to come up. He was talking about how Windows 8 and the way it's designed to run actually takes better advantage of the hardware than the previous version of Windows.
Yes.
He says that he's downloaded Windows 8 ISO today and installed it on an HP Z800 workstation, quad-core 3.2. Of course, that's quite a capable machine. It says it screams, well, obviously. Also installed on a single processor, 2.7 HP DX2300 with only 2 gigs of RAM, and it still runs pretty well on it.
Yes, it's designed to run on a smaller hardware configuration.
So if you have a computer that would not necessarily upgrade to Windows 7, do you think it would upgrade to Windows 8?
It runs well on the minimum configuration for Windows 7, which is a gig of RAM, a 1 gigahertz processor. And that's been the configuration recommendation since Vista, actually.
I was going to say, what about machines that were Vista capable that weren't really Vista capable?
Would it run better on those than Vista did? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they showed at the Build conference last year that I went to was they showed the memory usage of just the standing operating system without running anything else. And the amount of the operating system that was loaded into memory was significantly less than when Windows 7 is just sitting running idle. So it uses just at its base much less memory.
Interesting. All right, 713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air with Technology Bites tonight. I've got both of my headphones covering each ear, so if Flicted needs to send us a secret message while we're broadcasting, I'll actually hear it this time.
I'm going to spoil that Ted thing.
Go ahead.
It was done by Ted and Ridley Scott. So it's one of the characters from Prometheus doing a TED talk in 2023. Which Prometheus is the new Ridley Scott movie that's coming out here in a little while that is based on the Aliens universe.
Cool.
But not supposed to be the same exactly. Anyway, it was kind of cool.
It sounds cool.
This is weird. I did something with that CD, and now the DVD, and it's not showing up on my desktop to be ejected.
It's like Aliens. It's taken up root in your...
I'm trying that, too. It's,
in your MacBook.
All right. There's your
that
disc.
That was the sound of the alien bursting from the
chest.
Is your Mac called Skynet? Whose Mac is called Skynet?
That's mine.
That's yours?
Yeah.
Who's big XPS, baby?
That's Dwight.
That's the Dell XPS.
Is that you?
It's the Dell XPS. It's the big baby. Because at home, it's something else and something else. The other computers are named something else. Big baby and little baby.
All right, well, we got no calls in the queue. You're tuned in to Mac Chat. We're talking about Windows 8. Obviously, we're keeping ourselves entertained.
Should we give it our bonjour address? So people can connect to it.
All right, so I've made the image, which makes a CDR file. Now, is there a way to mount...
A DVD-R. DVD, not a CD.
It called it a CDR, the extension when I created it on the Mac. It created...
That may be... Well, that's... That's the extension, but it's not a CD.
Right, no, I know that.
Yeah.
But it's an ISO file that I can burn to a DVD. Mm-hmm. Can you mount that as a bootable thing in Parallels?
Yes, in fact, you could run Parallels now and boot and install from that.
I don't think I have the latest version of Parallels, so that might be interesting.
Yeah, it needs to be the latest version.
What if it's not?
Is it 7?
Let me see what I've got here. It's been a while since I looked at it. I've actually thought about deleting it, but I think it's 6.
Oh, you need 7.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know this?
Because I don't think 6 even recognizes Windows 8. 7 will recognize Windows 8. I mean, it'll think it's Windows 7, and that may not be the best thing for you.
Oh, this is Parallel 7.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to try to install it. So I should be able to say new.
Yep.
And...
You know, you may want to look and see if there's an upgrade for Parallels before you do that.
So check for updates.
Yes.
All right. A new version is available.
Do it. Do it.
All right.
It'll only take it one day to download.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that, hey, why don't you hook up to the Ethernet? I bet you could get there's an Ethernet thing right there. Hook up to that, Jay. Hook up to that.
No, I'm fine.
Tart really wants you to use your port again.
He wants to put the... I am not the port to your Ethernet.
Do it. Here they are.
713-526-5738. You know, we've got company in the studio, so it'd be nice if we could put on a show for her.
All right, I'll do it. Can we make it not so chilly in here?
Hey, you can do a reenactment of the Die Antwoord ginger song.
Enter the ginger.
Well, I've got no calls in the queue. Groovehouse is...
Have we given the phone number out lately?
Yeah, we have. I'm not giving it out
I'm
again.
Just saying.
Let's give that thing out somewhere.
713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Router behind router or whatever.
Router on router action. We're going to have to spice it up to get some calls here.
I need GCPIP for my comport.
Surely someone's gotten cut off at the St. Arnold's event by now.
And they need to call and ask a burning question.
A burning question. All right, 713-526-5738 to be on. I guess we could just turn this into the Skyrim talk show.
Jay's a gamer.
What if we get Dwight to, like, talk about the iPad 3?
And what about the iPad 3?
Exactly.
Oh, it's being announced, right?
Being announced on March 7th. Apple hasn't said, oh, we're going to announce the iPad 3, but they had on the invitation they sent to press, it had a picture of an iPad and a finger touching the date March 7th on the calendar, and it said, we have something you'll want to see and touch.
When you installed in Parallels, did it detect it as Windows 8, or did it not? Was it not able to detect
it? It detected as Windows 8. It saw it was Windows 8.
All right, so...
You're going to need the update.
I'm going to need to update. Yeah.
So, Apple has not indicated when this will go on sale, but typically, at least with iPad 2 and I think iPad 1, they announced it on a Wednesday and it went on sale not the following Friday, but a week from the following Friday, so 9 days later. So that would make the date that it goes on sale the 16th. Of March.
There'll be pre-orders, though, huh?
There'll be pre-orders, and you'll be able... And they'll sell out in about 3 hours, and you will not get yours.
I'm going to get one. I'm going to try to get one.
Are you going to get up at, like, 3 in the morning to start clicking?
I'll script it. I'll put a testing suite on it.
Send me the script.
Okay. Solarium.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to buy one, I think, because I'm running... I've got an iPad 1, and I'm starting to feel inadequate.
Are they doing the thing where they have the world launch and everyone gets it at the same time? Again, is that what's going on that early in the morning? Or they just want to mess with geeks?
I don't know.
On that?
I think they just want to mess with geeks. I was tempted to go stand in line somewhere this time and then live blog doing that, but I don't know if I want to do that.
If you do it, let me know, and I'll give you some money. I might actually wait with you.
What day of the week is that?
It's a Friday.
It's a Friday?
Yeah.
I'd be down for a few hours in line, not like an overnight thing, but, you know.
No, I wouldn't want to do a few hours. I wouldn't want to stay overnight. Although,
why don't you stay overnight? Live blog it.
Oh.
Maybe you could pay Groovehouse to stay overnight in line for you.
Who? What? Not standing in no line.
Well, how about if we all pay you to get us one while you're there?
If you buy mine.
Oh, no.
I'll stand in line and pick up yours. If you all chip in, you know, each chip in $100, you can...
We would need a lot more people to get an iPad.
What is your time worth? What is your time worth?
Well, it's not worth standing in line for that, and it's not worth an iPad.
But they probably have a limit on the number you can buy.
I would assume, like two or...
Two, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe even one.
So is this SHA-1 hash what I need to put in for the product key? Or,
no, there's a product key.
I see it now. Yeah. I found it.
Okay. Just to make sure no one swapped out your download with something you don't want.
Oh, I see.
We've got some calls now.
Yay, calls.
All right.
In fact, one of them is what we were discussing.
One's covering all the bases.
Right.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next, it's the bass coverer. It's David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Felt like I should help y'all out. Y'all are having too much fun.
Oh, so you're going to help us out by making it less fun?
I'm here to kill the party.
No. I love the station. Love the interaction. It was all good. But I had a silly question.
We probably have a silly answer.
Oh, okay. As I told the pre-screener, I've got a HP. That's whatever it is, laptop, and had to buy an iPad for work, and I'm still using my BlackBerry phone. But my question is, I found out, or at least read the other day, that I can use my BlackBerry as a hotspot. Yeah, most places have wireless, so I haven't had to mess with it, but is that indeed true?
Do you know what phone you have, what model?
I want to say it's probably the Bold.
Which carrier?
Who's your carrier?
AT&T.
No, you have to pay for that service additional.
Okay, so I thought there was some hardware that came with the phone that I could plug into at least the HP, not the iPad, I'm sure, right?
It may be capable of doing it, but you do have to pay extra to do it.
So it's still, I might as well go get the hotspot if I need it anyway. Yeah, and like I said, most times you don't need it anyway. So it was simple question, easy question. Just thought I'd break the monotony.
Yeah, you can definitely, the hardware can definitely do it, I'm saying. All the Bolts can.
Interesting. So you're still going to pay for it, so you still might as well just get the little hotspot plug in anyway, right?
Is it one of those that's easy to get around to be able to do it, or I mean, because some of them are pretty locked down, but I don't know about maybe the BlackBerry Bold might.
I don't know how many people are jailbreaking their BlackBerries.
I think it probably is. I haven't messed with it, and probably since I bought the iPad, when I get the new phone, I'll get the iPhone anyway, and then I'll probably get rid of the PC eventually anyway. So it's one of those Mac PC things, and then BlackBerry as well. I throw that in the mix.
All right.
I think you got JB. You don't have a BlackBerry, do you?
No.
You have an Android.
I have an Android phone with T-Mobile that I use as a hotspot. T-Mobile doesn't know about it.
They do now.
Yeah. Funny. Look for Jay Lee. Look for Jay Lee in your records, T-Mobile. You'll find me.
Well, and I bought a little BlackBerry way back, and it's just in the cellar. So, it's all going downhill. Hey, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for breaking up the monotony.
Absolutely. I'll need help.
Sorry, real quick, check out tether.com. It looks like they may actually have some BlackBerry packages, but it's going to be an upfront cost. They want to sell you a software package, but that may help you get around the AT&T stuff.
Okay, cool. Hey, I appreciate it very much. Y'all have fun.
All right, thanks. Have a good night. All right.
Hey, Groovehouse may, you already know about it, may find this interesting. Shepherd Ferry, i.e. Obey, is probably going to jail.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is funny, though, because, he's a graffiti artist, so he does stuff that he could go to jail for all the time. But
he's not going to jail for that.
No.
They got him on tax evasion.
No, they he's probably going to jail because when he did the Obama Hope poster, he pre-sued to try to make it considered a work of original art. So when he did that, the AP countersued. And he claimed that it was from a picture of
him with
somebody. I forgot
movie
who the
star.
Other person was, yeah. But
George
then
Clooney.
Evidently, George Clooney, yeah. But then evidently, later on, Ferry realized that it actually was an AP photo that he took it from, but he had already started all this rolling, and so he went back and deleted some stuff on his computer and changed some facts and basically buried the fact that it was based on. And then recently he's admitted that he did this, so he's probably going to go for, criminal contempt for lying in court and stuff. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating. Taking down another graffiti artist using a loophole or using some kind of, backdoor law against him?
No, he lied in court.
Yeah, but he's not. I mean, he should have gone to jail probably for some of the other stuff he did.
Well, he never got caught, I guess.
Kind of like Al Capone. got, he just couldn't prove it. They couldn't make it stick. So he kind of really overprotected himself to the point of jeopardizing himself. He actually, it all backfired.
If you're a perjurer, this is a pretty good opportunity to get into the world of tagging. Do the crossover.
Who's up next, Groovehouse? Nobody?
He's on the phone.
I didn't look
you
up.
You want us to push the button in here?
Last I looked, he was not on the phone. Now he's on the phone. But, all right, yeah, let's take this call while he's screening that. Elliot, you're on the air.
All right, great. First, thanks are in order. I got the hoodie, the black hoodie in. That's really nice and comfortable. And I got Dwight Silverman's book on switching to a Mac. And my niece, who got a MacBook Pro, she's really loving it, saying it really lays it out step by step on how to go from Windows over to a Mac and be familiar with it. So I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for the support.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, okay, simple question maybe. I have, like, an old Windows XP, and it's got a lot of, like, on the Internet browser, which I think is Internet Explorer 7, which is out of date, of course. It's got a lot of settings for, like, you know, everything from business to economics to political to YouTube and stuff like that, whatever. And I want to move all those favorites over to a Windows 7 that I just bought at Dell. And both of them are Dell Vostros. And I'm just wondering, what's the simplest way to do that? Because I was inside the stores, and I was looking at drive image and switch thing, whatever, and I just wonder if any of y'all had a favorite way to move those over.
Yeah, you open up your, on the original computer, the old computer, is it running XP?
It's an XP.
Right. Okay, XP is all I needed. C:\Documents and Settings\Your Username.
C:\Username.
There's a folder called Favorites.
Favorites.
You grab that folder and throw it on a thumb drive or an external hard drive, and you copy it into, on the new computer, it'll be C:\Just listen and then write it down. C:\Users\Your Username on the Windows 7 computer and drop it on top of the Favorites folder there and replace it, and you'll have all your favorites.
Shouldn't IE have an export function?
Well, you don't need to.
Oh.
Why would you? Because they're each...
You just export your favorites and then... import them into the new one instead of C:\Blah blah blah.
Yeah, but blah blah. Wow.
For a Windows guy, that's pretty tough talk.
I don't know. You just export them and then import them into the new one. It's
file, export. Yeah, where do you want to save it?
It's
okay,
all in IE. It's got a drop down.
It's already there. It's already a folder.
Okay.
So you.
But the other guy's got to remember C:\Username.
It's super easy. All he has to do is open up Windows Explorer. Groovehouse got to stay on the. Oh, where do we got?
Opening the door. Sorry.
This is just two very different approaches to take doing the same thing, and it's all, may almost be generational because yours is like very command line, and he's kind of like just use the features that are there.
Well, mine is not even command line. It's like you use Windows Explorer.
Command line desk.
Everybody who uses a computer, especially something as old as XP, should at least be familiar with. Windows
Let's
Explorer.
Let's not argue and bicker about who killed who.
Y'all guys are starting to frighten me.
All right. All of your favorites are in a folder called Favorites under your user profile. You move it from one user profile to the other. But, yeah, you can export them in Internet Explorer, export the favorites to a folder that you then take that folder and move it over to the other computer and then use the import feature in Internet Explorer and import those favorites back.
Okay.
Or you could get...
Click start, click run, type in CMD, and then...
All right. Now, here's what you do. You get on the new computer, and from memory, you visit all the sites in your bookmarks, and you re-bookmark them.
if you can't remember them, they weren't worth going to in the first place.
You only go to six sites anyway.
Open it up. Get notepad. They're not on your computer. Get a physical notepad
and write them all down.
Write them all down.
The point is that you don't need a piece of software, a third piece of software, a third party piece of software to be able to migrate your favorites.
Very true.
Okay.
So when you're setting up your new computer, if we're only talking about favorites, there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can use the export feature, export them, then grab that, move it to the new computer, and then use the import feature and point to that folder and import them. But each bookmark is simply a file inside of your favorites folder, so it doesn't take up much space. You can throw it on a thumb drive and you can bring it over. It's not a big deal. The more difficult thing that you're going to encounter is maybe trying to move over your mail stores. If you have your mail archived,
I have Yahoo and Google.
Oh, well, that's fine, that's all online, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So you have that. Then your applications, you'll need to reinstall those. But any of your documents, if you created, you know, Excel documents or Word documents or your image files.
Yes, I do have quite a few Word documents.
So do you store those under My Documents?
Yes.
So you grab the My Documents folder, same deal, you know, C:\Documents\Settings\Users, you know, your username. Grab that My Documents folder and drop it in Windows 7, and this is the point I wanted to make that's important, is in Windows XP, all of your user files are stored under C:\Documents\Settings, and in Windows 7, it's stored under C:\Users.
Ah.
And also what's interesting about Windows 7 is that if you take, like, your My Documents folder and drop it on the My Documents folder on a Windows 7 machine, it will identify if there, because it uses a different location for music and so forth. If it sees that there's music files and there are image files, it'll move those to the image file folder or the music folder.
Okay. So if it's an image file and document in XP, it'll move it over to an image file in Windows 7.
Yes. And okay. To a special folder. But it's, you'll see it. It's super easy.
I've been using Windows 7 for about 6 months. I like it. Okay. Quick question. I heard you last radio show, y'all talking about storage. And I have a lot of photographs, and they're like on multiple flash cards, and I was going to take and put them on a hard drive. Do y'all have any recommendations? Because I was in like Fry's and Best Buy and everything, and I was looking at Seagate and iOmega and Western Digital. Do y'all have like a favorite external hard drive that has software already written into it that enables you to sit there and download to it really easily from your present computer and get it off your hard drive to free up some space?
Well, you're talking about, you know, the brands is not going to matter, and then you're just talking about backup software, whether it comes, you know, Mac Store has a thing called OneTouch, which is an application. They store it on the hard drive, but you actually install it onto your computer from the hard drive, and it allows you to set it up to look at certain folders and move those and make backups to the hard drive. But I don't have a particular brand that I'm, you know, that I favor over another one.
I mean, all three of those brands are mainstream. You're not going to go wrong, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, because I've read, you know, you look at a Maxter, and then you look at iOmega, and then you look at C, you go online, you read reviews, and you've always got like one out of four or five people say, it's terrible, it ate all my files, it doesn't work, and you just get to this point where you just really can't make a decision and pull the trigger on getting one because you're afraid it'll eat all your files or it'll fail miserably.
Well, the best way to do this is the same method, really, that Jay was pointing out for moving those favorites, is just to use Windows Explorer and drag and drop them.
Yeah.
That's really the simplest way to do it. You don't need any fancy software.
Huh. Windows Explorer, drag and drop.
Yeah, I mean, you could take, you know, what I do on, I could do this on my PC, I do it on my Mac, but what I do is I just take the folder that has all my image files in it after I've finished editing them and doing what I need to do to them. I just take that and drag it and drop it onto my external hard drive.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to have a program that does it for you. It's just you're a click away.
All right, I like that. Simple.
Yeah, nice and simple. You don't have to rely on another program to kind of do it for you. But the nice thing about a backup software is that it will remember to do it. If you forget, if you get lazy and you keep leaving stuff on your hard drive, think I'll copy that over later. I need to shut down and run out the door, and your hard drive crashes. You don't have a backup of it. At least the backup software is going to look at that periodically and do that. So
right, that's what I was thinking, because I start getting documents and they're kind of irreplaceable and stuff, and you go, oh crap, I need to start backing this up more regularly.
Well, Windows 7 has a really nice backup features, you know, built into it. So look at that, and you buy any hard drive that you like that's got a good price, it's one of the name brands, and then set Windows 7 up to back up your folders that you care to back up.
All right. Well, good information. Do appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Groove House?
Yes.
Import. How much exporting have you been doing? Do you import, export?
I do favorites at work and stuff. I'll import them and export them.
Okay.
Get Chrome?
When you set up somebody's new computer, do you go get their autocomplete file from Outlook?
Autocomplete? No.
No?
No.
I do. That's what our users, they don't care about their address book. They just want that, the NDS stuff, the autocomplete stuff to pop up. And if you don't move that, that's when things get issued.
Just want their documents and their favorites.
You know, what I do, when I'm setting up somebody with a new computer at work, what I do is I build the new PC, I put the image on it, I get it all set up and everything, and take the hard drive out of their old computer. I have a cable I connect it to, and I connect it to the new computer, and I use Windows Explorer. I go, here's the favorites, here's the documents, here's the autocomplete file for Outlook, here's the PST files, bing, bang, boom, done. Takes me like, you know, 2 hours top to completely get a new PC up and running. I don't even have to boot their old computer to be able to get the stuff. So your method, I guess, if you want
to... I was just trying to make it easy for the guy instead of him.
No, you were disagreeing with me on the air, and you will be held accountable.
You will be punished.
Wow. You're a no for the Geek Gathering, right?
Yeah. I am now.
I am now.
I've been banned, probably.
No.
I'm off Barrett's list. I'm off your list now.
So. You've never been off my list, man. You think you're getting on my bad list, but you're always on my good list.
That word I said last couple shows ago.
No. Yeah.
He's super sensitive about you. you shot him down, and you didn't even shoot him down, and he took it personally. I just went after him. We're doomed. This friendship's over.
Shell art is over.
This bar is over.
Well, Groove House, before you quit in anger, do you have another call in the queue for us?
I do.
Why do y'all keep looking at the monitor?
Well,
what's the heck going on out there?
Doorman.
Well, the thing is, the buzzer
is not working.
Evidently blew out with everything else, with the electric. Strike. And so you don't know when people are out there unless you look up and see somebody standing out there waiting for the door.
Because I used to hit the buzzer, and then we would hear it and open the door for them. Now you just got to kind of keep looking at the thing up there, the monitor.
Did somebody, who was standing there waiting, flash something at the screen? I saw a flash.
That was Otis.
It was the alarm.
Otis. That was Otis, right. And he called the hotline.
He called the hotline that made the light go off.
Because I couldn't recognize him from the screen, and I thought it was the homeless guy again. I didn't want to let him in.
It's just Otis.
I wasn't going to let him in.
Poor Otis.
But when he called the hotline, I knew he was serious. Yeah, when the hotline line blinks, it's serious stuff.
All right, 713-526-5738. We got about 20 minutes left in the program tonight, and we'd love to hear from you. So we got one call in the queue. We got open lines. Groove House?
Yes.
If you're still speaking to me, who's up next?
Up next, we've got Chuck.
Chuck, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening, Jay.
Good evening. Nice one.
just kidding, really.
No, hang up on him.
Hey, nope. Listen, I've been hearing a lot about how our browsers snoop on us, and I want to know, is there a safe browser that I can get away from Explorer, and mostly I use Chrome and Firefox.
Chrome is probably pretty good. I would think.
Actually, Chrome has got... there's a lot of questions now. Well, not a lot of questions. I've seen some real concerns about Google and Chrome's integration and the way that it saves your search history and stuff. Because when you start to type stuff into Chrome, it communicates with Google and starts querying before you even hit the enter key. I saw this guy did a video where he did packet capturing and saw as he starts to type in the address bar... it starts sending information to Google even before you hit the enter. So you can start to type a word you're thinking about searching on, never hit the enter key, and Google has a record of it.
Right.
So so when you talk about safe browsing or anonymous browsing, it gets a little tricky.
It was Safari.
Yeah.
Because there was a Safari setting, but Google's been going around that for a while now without anybody knowing about it.
One of the things I've started doing, at least, you know, like at our office, is, you know, like all the different, you know, sites that collect that information, like, you know, like the CNAMEs that Google uses to that, we just block it at the router to where they can't actually report back. You know, like all the AdAware stuff, all the different advertising sites, all the DoubleClick stuff, we just, you know, block it, keyword block it, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
The other thing that you can do is in Chrome, and I'm not sure about others, but you can turn a lot of that stuff off. You can turn off the early searching. You can turn off the variety of things. You turn off sync so it doesn't sync. And if you don't log in...
Yeah, don't log into Google. It doesn't associate that with your profile necessarily. I mean, it still might, but not
But it definitely associates it with your IP address.
Yes, if you care about that, yes.
If I'm not logged in to Google.
Right. In other words, if you... Yeah. Let's say that you have a Gmail account and you log in to get your Gmail... And if you just stay logged in, everything you do gets associated with your Google profile. If you log out, it won't. The other thing you could do is you can use what's called in private browsing. What is it called in Chrome?
Safe browsing.
Safe browsing.
Incognito.
Right. Incognito. That's right.
And, incognito.
Right. And so you open a separate window and it leaves no traces, no cookies are left. It remembers no history.
That doesn't necessarily protect you against Google, though, if Google's dipping into their own.
Google,
yeah.
Right. But if you're not logged
protecting you against
Google,
everyone else.
If you're not logged into Google, then it essentially leaves no traces on your machine.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's encouraging.
There's also, I've installed an extension into Chrome. I use Chrome called Do Not Track Plus, and it will prevent third-party cookies from tracking you and also prevents third-party ads from showing up in your browser. This can prevent some features on some websites from not working properly, but it does a pretty seamless job of doing this. So if you do a Google search for Do Not Track Plus, you can download it directly, and it will show you how many things it's blocking at each website and let you turn them on and off. So, for example, if you want to be able to click Facebook like buttons, you can turn Facebook like buttons on.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, sir. Thanks.
Well, tell me that whole title again.
It's called Do Not Track Plus.
Plus. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Thanks for your call.
I wonder if you went and got a really, really old browser, like Netscape Navigator.
Won't run.
Lynx. Well, even Lynx is probably good enough to follow stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I wonder if, like, it would be just so full of holes that it would be worse than a current one, or if it would be so old that they wouldn't even have the ability to do what they're doing now with the new ones.
They probably wouldn't have the ability to attack it, but your browser also probably wouldn't have the ability to render, like, you know, 50% of the web out there. So, trade-off. You got an inbound call?
713-526-5738. We've got about 20 minutes left in the program here on Technology Bites. How's that Windows 8 looking over there, Dwight?
Oh, I've turned it off. I'm not.
Are you already over it? Installed it? Done it?
Done it. Yeah.
Done with it?
The problem with the mouse cursor was just too annoying. I wasn't able to. Yeah.
Do you think that would be solved if you actually installed it on real hardware?
Yes, I've installed on real hardware, and it's fine.
Apple hardware isn't real hardware?
Virtual Apple hardware isn't real hardware. That's
in a virtual, it parallels, it's virtualized. And
eventually, Parallels will release the drivers you need for it, and it'll work fine. They have drivers for the developer preview, but they don't have it yet for this.
But it's still day one, you know. Yeah. Right.
That's why they call it Bleeding Edge.
Bleeding Edge. All right. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up next, we're going to take Eric.
On browser security. Hi, Eric.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
I'm a longtime listener, longtime lurker. I call every couple of years, I guess. Enjoy the show. And I was just listening to the conversation about the browsers. And my experience with Google has been good, but I am also concerned with sort of the approach that Google's taking most recently about storing data and becoming a giant data database on their users, and that really is kind of concerning to me. So I'm leaning away from them. I've been a longtime Apple user and always felt like Safari was really good. And I've used the private browsing feature, but I've noticed most recently that even when that is clicked on, that I'll get served advertising off the side on certain sites that are recognizing the basic area that I'm coming from. So I'm not sure that that's still working the same way that it used to. And maybe you guys can illuminate that a little bit for me. But it seems to me that there should be a very easy way to solve this, and that would be to create an application that ran between the browser and the internet, and basically every time you clicked on something new, it was like re-logging on. And
we could like call it
IP address.
Maybe like a proxy or some kind of word like
exactly.
that. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'll hang up and listen. But I think this is a really important question for us all as human beings who are on the internet trying to find the information, trying to share information. Don't necessarily want Big Brother knowing everything that we're doing and keeping track of everything. And
all right.
Not to make him any more paranoid, but I found the article just like last week. Wall Street Journal came out and they more or less published an article that said that Google, along with several other companies, are covertly tracking the online moves of Apple's web browser Safari, even though the browser blocks such tracking by default.
Yeah, it was interesting. There's an Infomatic, whatever, that goes along with it. It actually shows you in the HTML code how Google was doing it, and they're basically using JavaScript to submit in an iframe a hidden form
and keep it. That's hackery.
That then the page load submits the form, so that the browser thinks you're going to a different site, I guess, and then so then at that point it allows like cookies to come back, and then I guess maybe some other people saw that, and so some of the other advertising companies started doing the same sort of thing.
Yeah, that's how you load up malware on websites and deliver it to end users. Yeah. That's kind of gray.
713-526-5738. It's been kind of sporadic tonight. I think every time we get thrown out of our rhythm, like, you know, there's no Peter Hughes info shot or
no news,
something like that.
Yeah.
Did you post the Barrett time?
Not yet.
Will you do that now?
I will.
Don't get on his bad side.
I'm telling you.
Groove House, you're not
you're not helping. That doesn't mean I'm mad at you. I was just joshing.
He can't hear you.
Oh, okay, that's good.
He'll never know you apologized, and he'll continue to hold a grudge. And that's just the way that's going to be. Flicked it, I'm a little concerned with how bushy you're getting.
It's for the winter.
Yeah, it's going to be 80 degrees
next
tomorrow. Is it for next winter? He's stocking up his winter cred for when we actually have some cold weather.
Do you have a game plan, or is this just like lack of going to a barber?
Well, he was telling us, at the last Geek Gathering, that he's in a state of limbo until the weather, you know, either has a really cold spot.
Yeah, see, that's I haven't yet completely defined what has to happen for me to shave.
Not shave necessarily, at least trim.
My hair's gotten annoying now because I ride a motorcycle, and so the wind messes it up. So I have to like put gel in it now and wear a cap. And anyway, but I need to hit some pattern that allows me to cut my hair, and I haven't decided exactly what it is. It's either going to be like it can't get below a certain temperature for like 7 days in a row, or it has to, the high has to be above a certain temperature for 7 days in a row before I do it.
That's awesome. Most people go by like hair length. Like, okay, when my hair gets this long, I'm going to cut. But that's too obvious.
But he's working on it. You know, he's growing his winter pelt. And I think it's mostly optimism at this point that there's going to be a winter because it ain't happened yet. Maybe you should travel. Were you thinking about going to Russia? Is that also part of it? Was that in the background?
Yep, no, that won't be till May, and it'll be fairly warm there.
When in May are you going?
I'm not sure yet. I still haven't finalized, but probably late May into June.
All right. I'll be back. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
I see a city has called us.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know if it has big hair or not.
All right, well, who's up?
All right, up next, we've got Dallas.
Dallas.
Hey there.
Hey, I wish I had the Dallas theme song right now.
No. I can't stand them. I can't stand them. People, every time I say Dallas, so many people through the decades, Dallas, Texas, Jesus.
How many of them say Cowboys?
Yeah, well, that's not quite as bad.
Hey, I want you to know that I have a coworker that he's leaving the company now, but we've been working together for at least 10 years, and We all went out to lunch. His name's Marco, and somebody said, "Hey, Marco," and I went, "Hey, Polo."
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
But nobody out of 12 people, they all kind of went, "Oh, wow, we should have been doing this all along."
Yeah, no, oh, God. Now he's been signatured for the rest of his life.
Well, he's going to another company where maybe they don't know to do that either.
Oh, that's good. That'd be good, yeah.
Well, we apologize for taking the easy route on your name.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're just trying to have a good time. The reason I'm calling is that I've been a blind computer user for a long time. And, you know, no matter what adaptations we make, no matter what we do with JAWS and Window Eyes and the other screen readers, it seems to me like the web and other programs are just getting more inaccessible all the time. And it seems that the front runner of that is Flash.
Yes.
Yep.
And you know, of course, I mean, it'll see it. It'll go, well, unlabeled one, unlabeled two. Or it'll be numbers that represent a graphic. And, of course, my screen reader, unless somebody helps me label them for when I see them again, I'm out. You know, I can't do anything with
it. Flash is even bad for totally sighted people. It's just really bad navigation. If you're a bad web designer, it doesn't do well. The good news is, though, that Flash is kind of on its way out. It's going to be replaced by HTML5. And the other good news is it's still kind of smallish, and they've been around for a while, but there's a big web accessibility movement, you know, even here in Houston.
I mean, that's been around for a while.
And yeah.
But Flash is just not really designed to be
friendly.
Accessible. I mean, it's always been known as, like, Flash sites are not don't have accessibility options. They're not very good.
What I'm seeing with, you know, as more and more web content is being generated, it's getting sloppier and sloppier and done by people who are just hacks. They're stealing, you know, but if they're not stealing images, they're not coding with any sense for just good, even not being accessible to handicapped, to blind people or whatever.
Yeah.
They're still just writing nasty code websites to do it. So certainly the thought of making something accessible is not even on their radar or thinking about it.
Right.
When I generate web content, I kick myself. When I see that I'm not actually tagging a photo properly to indicate what the image tag is and what that is, I know that I'm doing that at the expense of somebody who's vision impaired.
Right, right.
But it takes a lot to even kind of think of how you're developing for the web for anybody other than yourself, much less somebody who's differently enabled than yourself. So
right. Well,
the same thing happens with language. You know, that with people that code in English, and not only is it not easily translatable, you know, it's English and it's bad idioms, it's bad it's bad grammar, it's, you know, not doing it in a way that could even be translated loosely by a good translation program. So,
well, you know, here's a suggestion. If you're halfway a good guy, which you guys sound like you're halfway good,
at least half good.
Yeah, that's why I think of myself. what you got to do is you got to go to a deaf blind school once a year. And you got to see how those people work, and you got to see their issues and how they've compensated, and it'll be inspiring. I mean, even if you spend like 10 minutes in there.
Yeah, we have a listener who's a young boy. He's probably
David.
12, yeah, he's
13. About,
he's a little older by now.
He's right? About older by now. He's maybe 15.
He was moving, wasn't he? Wasn't he leaving the country?
He might have been, but anyway, he's very young and blind, and he would call us and talk to us about He is also very much a geek and into technology.
Well, I'm halfway there, you know.
But he was very aggressive in how he was pursuing having a good computing experience and being blind. And one thing that that stuck with me that I thought was interesting, and which gets us back to Mac Chat, is that he bought his first Apple. And he found that
was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, well, Apple is better for us because of the voice over IP built in and all that. That's better for us than all this software that compensates for our deficit.
Right.
In fact, you know, probably the next couple of years, I'll sign on to that learning curve when I get rid of this machine. I mean, I'm still using XP. I'm very happy with it. I was sworn off Windows Vista 7. I just thought, well, it's probably not much better than XP, so I don't need to mess with that. And now I hear you guys talk about 8, and I go, could it possibly be that they've actually made it more accessible? I kind of doubt it.
I don't know. They might have. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they want to keep up with Apple. I mean,
how does the whole touchscreen experience translate? For
well,
the
it's
blind?
it's very simple actually, because everything I do with a screen reader emulates the mouse. So I've got all these keystrokes in my head, and a lot of them with this piece of software that I use, they use the insert on the keypad and various other keys, and numbers and F keys and all that.
Right.
So I can do pretty much what everyone else does.
Can you use a touch tablet device?
I could if the divisions were raised. If they were raised and I could feel them. Now, I know a guy, he's so smart, he's just stupid, you know. He has an iPhone, and it's totally touchscreen, and he's just all over that thing. Not me.
I guess the haptic feedback is what helps with something like that, where they actually have the vibration when you touch something properly.
So you don't so much need the vibration, but unless it wasn't raised. If it's not raised...
Well, it's not going to be raised on a touch screen. Right?
That's right. But if it's on a touch screen, that's my whole point. If it's not raised, each thing you push, maybe it would be a different pitch, a different kind of sound or whatever, but then you got to keep track of a million sounds with a million different functions depending on which part of the menu you're in. That's hard.
I guess even in today's modern age, it still sucks to be blind.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't suck like it used to.
Oh, that's good.
It's changed the whole world, since the late 90s.
Well, hey, listen, Dallas, we have to get out of here.
Hey, thanks, gentlemen.
All right, well, thanks for your call.
Okay, take care.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Wow, didn't see that coming. Hey-o!
Yeah, I almost made a joke about Dallas Observer, and then he immediately said, oh, I'm blind, and I'm like, oh, I'm glad I didn't say that.
All right, well, we appreciate everybody tuning in and participating in tonight's madness. Groovehouse and I are going to take it to the parking lot.
See you outside, Jay.
Oh, that was menacing.
I think I'd put my money on it.
See you at the Geek Gathering, unless you're Dwight or Groovehouse, by the way, this Friday coming up at Coffee Grounds.
You calling me chicken on the air?
We'll show up to the Geek Gathering and we'll see.
All right, well, we're out of here and for another week. If you're listening on KPFT, Vegan World Radio, coming your way next. If you're listening outside the Houston area on another station, I don't know what's happening
now.
But check your local listings. We'll see you next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Cruising for a bruising.
First you listen, then you fall in love. You have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week. And finally, you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today. And when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
Support the arts and help a local blues musician in his battle against cancer. Join us at Country Playhouse Thursday, March 1st at 8 p.m. for a special benefit performance of the play Proposals by Neil Simon. To honor our dear friend Leo Astor. Leo was recently diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and you can help. Proposals recalls one perfect afternoon in the summer of 1953. The housekeeper Clemma narrates the story of the Hines clan gathering for the last time at their retreat in the Poconos. If you enjoyed The Help, you'll love Proposals. Tickets and concessions for this performance will be by donation, with all proceeds to benefit Leo. There'll also be a silent auction featuring jewelry and plenty of other special surprises. Don't miss this chance to help Leo in his fight against cancer. Join us at the Proposals Benefit for Leo Astin, Thursday, March 1st at Country Playhouse, 12802.